Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
And here we are off to the races on a Saturday morning. Fantasy Sports Radio Network. This is FST Fantasy Sports Today. I'm your host, Mike Blewett. I'm here with Joe Galina, as we are every Saturday. I could not be more happy to be here and be on air because I have dealt with an entire week of just absolute butt-kicking illnesses for my entire family.
Oh, my God.
I was in the throes of it, but I had the least of it. When there's a stomach flu in your house, I can tell you the last place you want to be is in your house. And I had to do it. When your wife is sick and you have two little kids, you have no other options but to pitch in, right? So that happened, and I had to rearrange schedules and take some time off and, you know, miss a show here and all that other kind of stuff. But I had a cough and cold. I'm through it. I think I'm finally relatively healthy. Forgive me if I cough, but Joe, I have to say this with all my heart. It's good to talk to you, buddy.
It's good to be with you as well. I'm glad to see that you've kind of escaped from getting a major illness. You had a little bit, but you had a little bit, and you. I seem to be that way too. Like in my home, let's say if my wife gets sick, she's sick for weeks. Like a cold will linger, but I'll get sick for a day or two, and then I'm back. So I'm glad to see that you're here today, and glad we're gonna have some fun today.
My wife can't suck it up either. She gets sick and she's down for the count for a long time. So she's sort of back on her feet now, not 100%, but it is. That's bad times when you I thought I was dead man walking. I was like, well, it's just a matter of time, and I'm gonna get this thing too, and it's gonna be terrible. But I avoided it, and happy holiday weekend to many of you out there. Happy Easter upcoming. We got Passover coming up as well, so we're in the throes of Passover. So happy holidays to everybody. So, all right, let's turn it to baseball. We'll do baseball in this first hour. Second hour, we'll have Emory Hunt back on to talk more NFL draft. The draft only 5 days away now. Shout out to Nashville. I'm sure they'll have a great time. That's a great city from what I've heard. I've never made it there. It's probably number one city on my hit list. I've technically been to Austin, even though I've not hung out. What? Shocked at what?
At what a party town that Nashville is. Vegas, baby. Yeah. And I believe it's number two in bachelorette parties.
I've heard many times that's the case. Yeah.
And I think Broadway Street is the main strip, and there's just bar upon bar upon bar. Definitely, you should definitely take a visit there.
Some reason, it's just kind of avoided me. I've traveled a fair amount, but there's a couple of cities that have avoided me, in Nashville, Seattle, Austin. I just haven't been able to hang out. I've been to Austin. I just haven't been able to really hang out and experience it. So, all right, so we're going to do some baseball here. I am excited about the draft. I've obviously been doing a bunch of homework there, and Emory Hunt's going to help fill in the gaps there. Ed Oliver is the big riser on the draft boards. Finally, it's something we talked about on this show a couple of months ago. I just thought that people would eventually come to their senses on him. I do think he's a potentially premier defensive player in the league, and you're seeing mock drafts now with him in the top five, maybe the top three to the New York Jets. So we'll talk about that when we get a chance. So no other way to lead off the show than talking about what is the biggest story right now in MLB, and that's that Jacob DeGrom has been shut down, at least for a short period of time. He's going to be retroactive on the DL to April 16th, which means he can come off 6 days from now on Friday, April 26th. He had been dealing with an illness, which obviously I completely understand. There have been illnesses going around this area of the country, perhaps all over the country, but certainly here in the New York area. So he's been dealing with an illness. And then when he tried to throw yesterday, he said his elbow was, quote, barking, or the Mets said his elbow was, quote, barking, which will lead to an MRI, which means that the five-year, $137.5 million contract extension that he just signed, which, let me get the exact day that he signed it, March 26th, less than a month ago, 3 weeks ago, is already, may already have a black cloud over it. So I said to Joe right before the show, I just happened to turn on local New York sports radio. Mike Francesa, that many of you know who he is quite well, was taking calls of Mets fans that had just heard the news and were already freaking out and assuming he's out for the year. As you rightfully said, Joe, MRI is bad news, right?
Yeah. I mean, you don't just get an MRI just, you know, for the sake of it. Mets are trying to play this off just a purely precautionary move. But hey, you know, teams have been known to lie. And, you know, I understand with Met fans assuming the worst because they've had issues with their team and the way that they've handled injuries in the past. And, you know, it's definitely unfortunate. And I mean, DeGrom had been signed up until 2020, but the Mets did what a lot of people feel was the right thing in signing him to that extension. And you got to hope and have faith in the Mets organization that they did their due diligence and just making sure that, you know, leading up to the signing of that contract, that he was totally healthy. Hopefully it is nothing because, you know, the Mets are a fun team this year, man. When you look at, you know, McNeil and Alonso and, you know, the core of this Mets team over the past couple of years, you know, was that pitching staff. So DeGrom, they definitely need DeGrom in there and hopefully it's nothing serious.
Yeah, I mean, I was freaking out. I mean, I'm still freaking out because Chris Sale has been garbage so far. And right. In our draft that Joe and I are in the same league in, I picked Sale. I think I picked 12th. And I picked Sale, and DeGrom went one behind me. So there was a lot of consternation for me as to whether or not I made the right decision because Sale has been off to a bad start. But the start wouldn't be. He hasn't hit the IL yet, so in that sense, it's a positive as we see what happens with DeGrom. Obviously, we don't have that much information yet. The MRI is probably happening. I believe it's happening today, right? So you'll see. It's Easter Sunday. They're not going to release news then. You probably figure you hear about it Monday, right? That would probably be the first news that you would suspect.
Yeah,
to hear
I would think
it.
So.
So that is the big news of the day. And what will the Mets do? Would they be... They can't punt the season just because Jacob DeGrom got hurt. As you said, there's a little bit more juice in the lineup right now, and they would be a prime candidate to sign Keuchel. That it also would be antithetical to what the Mets' approach has been in recent years. Yes, they gave DeGrom this extension, but they have been, and to their credit, they added Robbie Cano, even though he's an expensive asset. So they spent a little bit more money. Brody Van Wagenen has said that there's no restrictions on him as a general manager. Why is it that Dallas Keuchel hasn't been locked up by another team? I don't know, but it seems like the Mets would be a prime candidate if DeGrom is out for an extended period of time.
Yeah, and another guy to think of is Gio Gonzalez, who signed the minor league contract with the Yankees, where he's expected to opt out. He had an opt-out option on that contract, where if he does, the Yankees have 2 days by which they need to add him to their major league roster. So, you know, I guess there's tampering rules in place, but there's rumors that, hey, if the Yankees don't move Gonzalez to their major league roster, that they'd be interested in adding Gonzalez. And when it comes to Keuchel, at this stage, from what I've heard, and you don't know what's true, is that he's looking for a contract that's in line with what the Astros had offered him. They offered him a $17.9 million salary before he became a free agent that he rejected because he wanted a multi-year deal. So now it's almost like pride where, you know, he wants to try to get at least what he would have taken, you know, what the Astros had originally offered him. So you have Keuchel, you have
he's got to prorate it now.
Gonzalez.
He's got to knock it
yeah,
off.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah. Agreed.
So. There are, man, it is amazing now to see how these stories start piling up, right, of guys that turned down deals that they never were able to get. Ian Desmond is probably the one that jumps out to me the most when he turned down his $100 million deal. He hasn't clawed much of it back, to be honest. And then you have guys like Yasmani Grandal, who turned down $60 million to take 17 or 18 with the Brewers. Probably a better situation team-wise, but if you're a catcher and you're getting up there and somebody throws $60 million down, I bet you nobody turns that down again, Joe.
Absolutely not. The good thing, I guess, with Grandal is that now at least he's in a good situation where he's in a hitter's ballpark with Milwaukee, a competitive team. So I guess, you know, $60 million being on a competitive team, I think I'd take the $60 million, I guess. But you still want to play for a competitive team. But those are two very good examples there, Mike.
Yeah, so as far as Keuchel is concerned, I think now it's all fallen away. It's really weird that a guy that's that talented just can't find a roster. Obviously, it's because he's digging in on the money, and now it seems like he's just got to go to a team on a prove-it deal and then try to get a two-year deal after this, right? His style of pitching is not in vogue right now, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Pitching to contact is not in vogue. They want swings and miss. They want you missing bats, and that's not really his game. I do think it's strange that MLB can't accommodate different styles of pitchers in that respect. I would imagine there's a place for him. He's obviously been effective in the majors. But as he gets up there, I think there's just an assumption that he'll start to get hit harder as opposed to still working his sinker and pitching to contact.
Yeah, you bring up a good point. His style of pitching, like you said, is not what, you know, it's not sexy anymore, right? And the fact that he's 31 years old, too, it's almost like a curse. You know, I mean, there are a few pitchers like Verlander, but different style pitcher, who just got an extension. But it seems like automatically these days, anyone over 30 is in the bigs is kind of looked down upon. But you're right, there are plenty of teams that could use him. I mean, you know, I look at the Oakland A's, who are 11-11, you know, the Indians have lost Clevinger for a very long time. I mean, there's plenty of spots where he could go. I think he's just got to, you know, lower his demands at this stage. I'm guessing it has to be money related.
Yeah, I mean, the negatives that you look at him last year, he faced the most batters in the entire league last year. He threw 200 innings. He gave up 211 hits and 58 walks. So there are numbers that you look at, which are, you know, frankly, from his Cy Young year in 2015, last year was a tough year, even though he started the most games in the league last year, 34. So he was healthy last year. He wasn't entirely healthy in 2017 when he was an all-star, by the way. So we'll see. We'll see if that's the answer. Last question on this DeGrom thing, and I want to move over to Kike Hernandez very quickly. What do you think are the chances that the Yankees do add Gio Gonzalez to the Major League roster?
I think it's a pretty good chance because not only have there been whispers that the Mets are interested in him, I haven't heard any rumors of this, but look, if you look at what their arch rival Red Sox, their starting pitching staff has been decimated. Who knows? Maybe they might be interested in a guy like Gio. And let's face it, I mean, we don't know exactly when Luis Severino is going to be back. We're thinking, That's right. Late June, early July. Even if they, move him to the major league roster and, put him in the bullpen to start. I mean, in my opinion, you can never have too much starting pitching.
I totally agree. And I go back to 2 years ago when Mets fans, I remember the dynamic with the Mets a couple of years ago. It was the year after they won the World Series, I believe, when they had basically seven starters. And there was a lot of talk, well, which guy do we move? Do we move Seth Lugo? Do we move Robert Gsellman? Do we move Zach Wheeler? Because he can get more of a return, and Wheeler's been dealing with injuries. And a bunch of guys got hurt. So not only did they need seven, they probably needed nine. And I just think that's the name of the game now. Guys aren't throwing as many innings. Guys are ramping it up. 50% of the roster, the pitching roster, is going to get hurt. I just think, guys are getting maybe guys are getting their pride hurt by starting in the bullpen. But I tell Gio Gonzalez, man, like, wait 2 weeks. CeCe's old. J.A. Happ is old. Mm-hmm.
Right,
one of these guys
has a history of going on the DL, on the IL.
Yeah, yeah. Well, like, I would go six man rotation almost all the time now. I really would.
I wouldn't be opposed to it.
I don't see why more teams don't do it. We're gonna come back. We'll talk about my six man rotation idea, which is not original, and Kiki Hernandez hitting the bomb off of Hader. Be right back after this on FST. It's a Saturday morning edition. We'll be right back.
From the NFL to the NBA, DailyRoto.com is the place to win millions in daily fantasy. You can get the best DFS NFL coverage all season long for a price of $129.99 or dominate the entire daily fantasy sports realm with the Elite Package at $59.99 per month. If you use the promo code FNTSY, you get 10% off your DailyRoto package. Go to DailyRoto.com, pick your NFL or Elite Package, enter promo code FNTSY, and you'll be on your way to becoming the next Daily Roto millionaire.
Welcome back to FST, Saturday morning edition. It's Mike and Joe. So we're just hanging out, talking baseball, talking some football as well in the next hour. But we were talking right before the break about the six-man rotation idea. And I'm surprised it hasn't been a more widely utilized thing. Now, I guess the assumption that one would make, or the counter to my idea, which I suspect isn't original at all. There's teams have used it sparingly, but maybe guys are throwing less innings. There's more of a move to using the bullpen after the fifth inning and getting guys out quickly. So does it matter if there's a six man rotation if guys really aren't throwing that many innings when they start the game? I guess it's a little bit of simple math. You can do it either way. But considering the amount of times we see guys go on the IL for a break, or we're going to push back his start, or we see it a lot. Especially, we've seen it already with Chris Sale. We see it with other guys consistently throughout the season. We don't need to push him early in the season. All right, why not just open the season with a six-man rotation?
Yeah, I'm all for it, for the reasons that you bring up. And maybe next year, I believe that they're going to expand the roster to 26 players. So maybe teams could add an extra reliever. So if they do go
but they are
the
going to limit
rotation,
the amount of pitchers, right, on the 26-man roster. I think there's going to be a cap on the number of pitchers. Now, teams push it as it is now. They won't allow you to stack with like 14 pitchers, for example. I think it's going to be limited to 12 or 13. I can't remember, but teams are basically doing that now. So I don't know that it adds the number of pitchers, but that is the way things are going, right? You need so many arms with relievers throwing more often. I know you just need an abundance of relievers, or go to the six-man rotation and have everybody throw five innings.
What do you think of the opener? How do you like the opener that Tampa Bay has been using? I kind of
well, they won freaking 90 games. How the hell would I doubt it?
Yeah, and they used it last night. I mean, they lost the Red Sox 6-4.
The Brewers use it in the playoffs. The A's use it. Like, it's not – I don't like it because I'm a – I don't like it with a small L, only because I'm a bit of a traditionalist, and I think it's cool to see guys throw – shutouts and go deep into games, and but that's how I grew up. I have to be try to be progressive in with new ideas, right? If you're such a traditionalist in baseball and you're railing against the shift and you hate the opener and you don't like the fact that guys strike out so much, then you're gonna really start to hate baseball. So yeah. I try to be mindful of that in order to keep my love for baseball alive. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yes. If you take a look at the game when we were kids, it's changed tremendously, right? Like, I always look to Reggie Jackson, who was one of my favorite players growing up. And what's he known for? He's known as a strikeout guy, right? So you look at his
He's the most strikeouts
career,
ever in the whole.
Right. But you know what his strikeout rate is for his career? 22.7. Which is, you know, when you take a look at compared to, you know, some of the guys that are in the league today, 22.7 is kind of tame. And meanwhile, Reggie was looked at as, like, you know, the strikeout guy of his time, of his era. So, yeah, I agree with you. You need to move with the times. You know, I don't love the opener, but you, like you said, you can't it's been successful. I mean, the Rays have been kind of like one of the more, you know, innovative teams of the past 10 years. You know, they introduced the shift.
They've had to be.
Hey,
they don't have any money. I mean, hey, they've had to be.
And if you don't like, and if you don't like the shift, learn to bunt. You know, play against the shift,
right.
And they won't shift against you anymore.
And by the way, all the analytics on the teams are telling the players that are hitting into the shift, keep hitting into it, because you're better. Because your sweet spot is to hit where they're playing you. You just got to hit it a little bit where they ain't, and we need you to hit it over the wall. So
right.
If you're Bryce Harper, they don't want you bunting. They don't. So you're not going to bunt. Every once in a while, try to keep them honest. You know what? It's not going to keep them honest. They're just going to play you in the shift, and you hit it over their heads. That's really the way it is now. It's, you know, again, if you're really dug in and being a traditionalist in these sports, then it's not going to be fun for you. If I like the NBA too. Everybody shoots threes now. When you look back at what Larry Bird shot during a given season, or the threes that he would make, it is a fraction of what Steph Curry does now. A fraction. And if you look at the NFL and all the rules to try to keep it quote-unquote safer, I say quote-unquote because it still isn't particularly safe, then you're going to be miserable. The NFL isn't as fun to watch when I was younger, but I still love it. It's just different. And they do have to be safer. They are trying to evolve. So I'm trying to evolve with it. I just think in being a sports fan, yes, you can object to things that you don't like. I can't think what my most vehement objection is right now in sports. You know what my biggest problem in all of sports is? That there's no microchip in the football for them to spot it.
So obvious,
that's my biggest gripe
in
all of sports. There's technology surrounding us in every aspect of our lives, but these gentlemen that are over 50, and I'm not making fun of their age because I'm in my mid-40s, and I just, in this last 3 months, developed the unfortunate need to wear readers. I can't read. I can't read without holding a paper away from my face anymore. I still haven't actually gone out and bought the readers, but right around Christmas time is when I noticed I needed them. I had 20/20 vision my whole life, so I need readers now. It sucks to read the computer. The computer screen's a little easier because it's bright, but anyway, I say this.
And I hate to tell you, once you start with them, it gets worse because
I know. That's why I'm not doing
you. I had 20/20 vision, and then I got just reading glasses, prescription reading glasses, and ever since then, it's been downhill, Mike.
I know. I know. So. That's why I'm not buying them. I'm still in denial. But anyway, for them to excuse me, I told you I was a little under the weather. So for them to spot the football accurately down to the inch when we could just have a chip doing that, it just doesn't make sense to me. So that's my biggest gripe. I'm all over the map here. But my point is that.
No, but I love that.
How could I? How could I reject the opener if it's going to work? It seems, you know, it seems ridiculous to some, but if it's going to work and it's going to save pitchers and have people be more effective, then so be it. I think people are on board. Yeah, I think people are on board with without limiting the pitching changes. I know that's one of the rules that's going to be instituted, but I think I'm down with that. But what's funny is that I think MLB thinks a lot of this stuff is going to speed up the game, but it's not really going to speed it up much. It really isn't.
Right. I think that's
too many strikeouts.
Yeah, I think that's a big reason why they want to kind of limit the number of pitching changes, the number of mound visits you could do. But you touched upon being like a traditionalist. And let me just ask you a quick thing about a story that's been in the news all week when it comes to baseball is the bat flips and the pitchers retaliating and throw. What do you think of all that? I mean,
it's a great point.
Yeah, it's a great point.
That is something that I think initially that's a perfect example of trying to evolve, because if I was a pitcher and I played baseball growing up, if that happened when I was younger, people would have lost their minds. But it's part of, and I'm not saying this in a negative fashion, it's part of the influence of Latin baseball players. They're far more celebratory than some old school American players are. I think that's a part of it. You know, Jose Bautista had the most famous bat flip ever, and it became a controversy. I don't know where you draw the line. As Marcus Stroman has said, and by the way, Tim Anderson is being suspended for what he said, not for the bat flip.
Correct. Yes.
People are sort of utilizing this to say, well, what's wrong with bat flips? I mean, MLB hasn't said there's anything wrong with it. Mm-hmm. You don't throw the bat at anybody, it's fine. You know, this whole policing the game, though, I saw a tweet the other day from Aubrey Huff saying if somebody did that, I'd call for the next pitch 100 to the guy's head. Like, what are we talking about? We start hitting people in the head like Bob Gibson used to do? Because they bat flip. Bob Gibson would throw it at your head if you dug into the batter's box. Forget the bat flip. He'd kill you if you bat flipped him. But I don't know where the line is, Joe. Because obviously, we've seen this in other sports. In basketball, you get dunked on, you get stared down. And the NCAA got rid of it. The NBA has limited it in some extent. In the NFL, every time there's a first down, somebody's celebrating. I think it's all sort of ridiculous, get back to the huddle. But I'm not going to stop anybody from doing it. I don't want to be the old man that yells at the cloud. Guys, you know what I mean?
In the background, let's face it, these sports that we watch, we watch them because we love the game, we love the competition, but at the other end of the spectrum is that it's entertainment. But also at the same time, on a personal level, I don't like to show up people, you know. But in a way I guess you let your emotions get out of get the best of you. And I liked what Randall Grichuk tweeted out. Act like this isn't the first time that you did it. So I'm kind of, I do not believe in headhunting. I mean, that's just nuts to say, to advocate that.
You can end somebody's career.
Career life. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's not my style necessarily, but you know what? In the heated moment of competition, even guys that say it's not really my style would get into it and bark at people, you know? Whether it was Larry Bird on the basketball court or, you know, Magic Johnson is a fun-loving guy. He trash-talked people and, you know, in the heat of the moment, guys that were sort of muted in their response, they would get into it with people and bark at people. There's competitive moments. There's a lot of juices flowing. I don't think you should bat flip every time, but if it's a big moment and you want to do it and that's your style, so be it. Like Marcus Stroman said, also in defending Tim Anderson, Marcus Stroman said, it's my job to get you out. If you hit a home run, you want to celebrate, that's fine. But if I strike you out in a big spot, don't come after me because I'm fist pumping and I'm doing whatever you want. Marcus Stroman, a local guy for Joe and I. He's from Long Island. So I can appreciate that sentiment. You know,
Yeah, I agree.
Get the guy out or don't strike out or whatever it is. So that I get. So it is a big story. I do think it takes on too much of a life of its own, but so be it. You know, I'm a Steelers fan, and the Antonio Brown saga is over for the most part. But a couple of years ago, he took 3 penalties in like the first 6 games for celebrating after a touchdown because of the rules that were in place at the time. And it's like, first time, all right, let's just try to not do that again. Second time, hey, we had this conversation. Can we just not take penalties every time you score a touchdown? He did it a third time, and it was like Tomlin was like, enough. You have to stop. Right. We can't be kicking the ball off from the 20 every time. It's just absurd. So that's where it gets. That's certainly one line that had been crossed. With the bat flips, look, it's a new generation of players, and it's going to keep happening, and you just have to get used to it. You cannot like it, but if you get really incensed over it, I think you'll have a miserable time watching baseball.
Yeah. And, you know, there are some people bringing the story back to football that don't like the celebrations in the end zone after a touchdown. Personally, I get a kick out of them, you know, when you get the teams lining up as if they're bowling pins and then they get knocked down. Yeah. I mean, they're just so creative.
Like it was so stodgy before for them to throw a flag every time somebody tried to celebrate something. Don't use the ball as a prop. Remember that stuff?
If
you used a ball as a prop, even slightly, to get a 15-yard penalty, it's like, come on, man. Like, just give them a little bit of room. The NCAA is even worse. With that kind of stuff and shutting it down. But nonetheless, good discussion there. I want to talk about Kike Hernandez because he hit an 0-2 pitch off of Josh Hader for a 3-run homer to give the Dodgers a 5-3 comeback victory over the Brewers and extend their win streak to 6. It's the first time he ever homered on an 0-2 pitch, and it's the first time Hader ever gave up a home run on an 0-2 pitch. Kike Hernandez came in on a double switch late in the game and hit a bomb. He actually thought it was a 1-1 count, but he hit just a fastball right over the middle of the plate, and he hit a bomb, 95.5-mile-an-hour fastball, apparently. And Kike Hernandez, who was, slowing down in the last week or so, comes in with a huge pinch hit homer, basically.
Yeah, and he was given that starting second baseman's job just before the start of the season, nice player, give you 20 or so home runs. It's good to see him, come out of that little slump.
Yeah. For fantasy players, he's currently
especially
hitting
against Hader.
No kidding. Last guy you expect that to happen against. On the season, hitting .292, 5 homers, 14 ribbies. To your point, he was a guy I got really late in our draft.
Yeah,
and he has a ton of positional
flexibility. I was looking for him when you took him.
Yeah, and he has a ton of positional flexibility, which is his ultimate saving grace. He may not hit in .292 for the year, and maybe he'll have some considerable slumps like the one he just went through, but his positional flexibility and the fact that he's in there almost every day is a big positive for me.
And just looking at some of his advanced metrics, his hard hit rate is 13% higher than last season. So he's really kind of coming into his own in terms of, the 20 home runs are a real possibility. And, when you think about Kiki, right, you didn't think of him as a kind of like a guy that could give you some pop in your lineup. But if you hadn't taken him, I was going to take him on the next turn.
Yeah, he's 27 years old, so, he's – the fact that he's got an everyday gig now, we'll see what happens here. Entering into his prime, he could be the kind of late round steal that provides you with a little extra juice in your lineup and certainly some stats there. We'll get into some box scores and everything else after this, but really a big number there. Hader kind of brushed it off. I think he realized that, he walked a couple of guys before that, which was his real crime outside of the home run. So We'll come back, take a look at that box score and some others and other news and notes in MLB. So it's Mike and Joe on FST on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Follow us on at FNTSY Radio on Twitter. He's at Joe Galina. I'm at Mike Blue. We'll be right back.
From the NFL to the NBA, DailyRoto.com is the place to win millions in daily fantasy. You can get the best DFS NFL coverage all season long for a price of $129.99 or dominate the entire daily fantasy sports realm with the Elite Package at $59.99 per month. If you use the promo code FNTSY, you get 10% off your DailyRoto package. Go to DailyRoto.com, pick your NFL or Elite Package, enter promo code FNTSY, and you'll be on your way to becoming the next Daily Roto millionaire.
You don't get a lot of meatloaf on a Saturday morning. Certainly, you rarely get it on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, but today's your lucky day, I guess. So, taking a look
one
at that
one of the best bar songs, man.
Yeah.
From back in the day. Sing-alongs.
No doubt. So, all right. So, the box score last night on Dodgers, just to sort of clean it up. So, Kike, obviously, with the big hit. And he goes one for one with a homer and the three ribbies. Outside of that, Verdugo, one for three and an RBI. Bellinger, one for four and an RBI. I think, was that a homer? No, it was not. So Bellinger with 25 RBIs on the season. How about that?
The 25 home run, the 25 stolen bases, hitting home runs like crazy, right? I mean, he had that incredible start a couple of years back. He had a decent year last year, but this guy has a lot of talent, obviously, man. No other way of getting around it.
No doubt. Eric Thames, home run last night, his third, and Yelich in the first inning off of Ross Stripling. So Yelich continues to maintain. Joe and I were talking off air to start the show. And Yelich is really an incredible pace right now. He's one for three last night with a run scored, two RBIs because of the two-run homer early, picked up a walk as well. So he's hitting .350 and leads the league with 11 homers and 29 ribbies right now. Additionally, his OPS is .1255 right now. So that doesn't lead the league, but it's early, and that'll obviously come down and everything else will smooth out. But the reality is that Yelich, you talked off air about people expecting some level of regression because he can't possibly maintain that MVP pace, but maybe he can. Maybe he's just that good.
Well, he definitely is that good. The thing is that last year, I think there was a period of maybe about 6 weeks where he was just unconscious. But look, you can't take away with what he's done. He's playing in a great ballpark, surrounded with a great lineup. And maybe, if he was still on the Marlins, Mike Paiarulo wouldn't have lost his hitting coach job.
Yeah, shout out to Pags, as Joe and I, as Yankees fans, dating back to the 80s and before. He was like a fan favorite. In New York, and Paiarulo had a pretty good career, but he was Don Mattingly's hitting coach in Miami and was relieved of his duties because they're dead last in runs. They're going to be dead last in a lot of things this year. Yeah. Probably wins, probably runs, and probably many more things. So I always feel like hitting coaches are just the easy firing for teams to make. But the real crime here isn't the hitting coach. It's the fact that there isn't enough major league talent, quality major league talent to work with yet. So they make the move, and what are we, 20 games into the year? So sorry to see Pags go. Couldn't have been easy for Mattingly. I'm sure they're buddies. They were in the minors together and they played together on the Yankees, but I think that's just part of the business, and you move on. So
One other thing I want to mention about that Dodgers Brewers box score.
Please
and
do.
You mentioned that Eric Thames hit a home run, and Jesus Aguiar has been slumping terribly. So this you know, Thames has been getting some more starts over the past couple of weeks. He hits a right-handed pitching at it. He's pretty good against right, not great, but pretty good against right-handed pitching. And Aguiar, like I said, I think he's batting on the 200. So, and
yeah,
I know from a personal
right
level.
Now. On the
he's
year.
Killing one of my fantasy teams. I think the one that we're in together. So,
yeah.
So maybe we might be seeing a little bit more of Thames moving forward. Unfortunately,
yeah. So Aguiar pinch hit last night and did not get a hit. In fact, he struck out in his one at bat. 153 on the season. It's early, but you know that's a pretty significant slump. So let's take a look at a couple of the other box scores right here. I watched a bunch of the Yanks last night, so might as well. Talk about that one. They got it in just before the skies opened up last night, which they are still wide open here in the New York area. Brutal rainstorm right now. I don't think it'll impact the game today, though, because it's supposed to stop early afternoon. So I think they might be able to get this game in. But last night, Gardner, 1-for-2. He hits a big homer last night. And yeah, he had a two-run homer last night off of Junis. And there was an interesting moment there where Maldonado was looking into the dugout for the pitch to be called, clearly didn't like it, and called the pitch anyway. And Junis just grooved it right down the middle. Fastball, and Gardner hit it out of the park, and Maldonado was noticeably upset, probably with the bench and Ned Yost. But that's the reality of what happened. So Gardner hits a home run, puts the Yanks in a good spot. The Yankees I think, paced this game pretty well. They got good pitching last night. Sabathia opens up the season with back-to-back five-plus inning starts in which he allowed zero runs. He joined a pretty solid group of Yankee pitchers that have done that. Mel Stottlemyre, the always popular Freddie Garcia was on that list, but nonetheless, Sabathia gets a win, his first win of the season last night. I mean, from a fantasy standpoint, I don't know what kind of expectations you can have for Sabathia, but he's always been really good at being a grinder. Now, this is his last season. We'll see to what extent he can grind it out. Now, I say he's always been good at being a grinder. That's not dismissing how great he was early in his career, but he was able to evolve. And what I always thought was most impressive about Sabathia, even if his numbers weren't the stuff of Cy Young awards, he has always done a really good job of hanging in games, figuring out how to limit runs when things are going badly and hang in there to get the team a win. I know that's somewhat anecdotal, but that's the thing I've always appreciated about him, is that the wheels rarely came off, and they specifically didn't come off in situations where they could have.
Yeah, well, I saw a stat where he is 15-1 with a 2.71 ERA in games where he pitches after a Yankees loss. So,
right,
I think that's a big deal. And what I love about him is that
it's a mental approach.
Yeah. And over the recent years, he's adjusted where, you know, he finally has accepted that, hey, I'm not the guy that has that mid-90s fastball anymore, and he's becoming a pitcher. I mean, my best memories of him, I mean, obviously, you know, he had some great years for the Yankees. His first year with the Yankees, we won a World Series. I say we, huh? But remember what he did when he got traded midseason to the Brewers, how unhittable he was. But you give a good description. Yeah, I could see you calling him a grinder. I mean, look at the career that this guy, I mean, he's going to surpass 3,000 strikeouts probably with his next start or two. And I saw somebody tweet out, and I don't necessarily agree with this, that maybe he could pitch another 2 or 3 years and hang around until he gets his 300th win. But I don't agree with that. But, you know, the knee-jerk reaction that you get.
That would take a lot more than 2 or 3 years. He's not pitching enough.
Right.
He's not pitching enough innings to get enough wins. And by the way, nobody gets a lot of wins anymore. He's going to get to 250. Right. He's got 247 wins. He should get to 250. Do you put him in the Hall of Fame?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, the ERA is a little high. You know, it's right now it's 3.69, but the 3,000 he'll have the 3,000 strikeouts. He'll have the 250 wins. You know, when you look at who else is in there, I mean, to me, comparable stats, maybe not the same type of pitchers, but a Jack Morris is in there. So if Jack Morris is in there, I think that CC Sabathia could be in there as well.
Second in Rookie of the Year, Cy Young Award all the way back in 2007. Top five Cy Youngs 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 times. Been a long time since then, but nonetheless, you know, All-Star games 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I don't know if people even care about that when it comes to pitchers, but top five Cy Young 5 times. The 250 wins, like you said, the 3,000 strikeouts. Where's he at? Right, yeah, he's next start. He could get it. So I put him in. Those types of numbers are not going to be easy to get to anymore. Even forget 300, 250 is not going to be easy to get to anymore with the way, in the manner in which guys are limited in how they throw and not throwing deep into games and getting a lot of no decisions. You know, I think that's just the state of baseball moving forward. It could come back.
Scherzer only has 160.
Yeah, I don't expect it. Right.
You know, Scherzer's 34, has 160. He's, you know, one of the last guys.
He's dominant.
You know, yeah. And he pitches deep into games. But you're right that the next crop of starting pitchers, they're just not going deep into games anymore.
Yeah, you make a great point. 160. And he's got 2,500 strikeouts right now.
Mm-hmm.
So he'll obviously get to 3,000.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think when. You know, he had 300 strikeouts last year. He could get to 3,000 by next year if he continues just at his Max Scherzer pace. He get to 3,000 strikeouts next year. And what would you give him? Would you tack, let's say he pitches really well, give him another 35 wins. He'll be at his 3,000 strikeouts at age 35, and he won't yet be at 200 wins.
Right.
So he's that type of dominant pitcher. He's led the league in strikeouts the last 3 years. He's had over 250 strikeouts in a season each of the last 5 years. So, yeah, dominant stuff. And
is he a Hall of Famer for you?
Cy Youngs. Scherzer?
Yeah.
Already in.
Yeah?
Already in. If it ended today.
Yeah, I mean the three Cy Young awards. That's obviously super impressive, but I guess traditionalists or like people who are real sticklers might say, yeah, this guy's going to probably end up with maybe 200, 210 wins. He's going to have, like what you mentioned, the 3,000 strikeouts. The ERA is going to be over 3. I mean, there are people that will argue probably against it, but there's no doubting that, you know, from, let's say, 2012 on, he's been, one of the best pitchers in baseball.
But it's like these guys that go back and look at Koufax and say, yeah, it wasn't that great. You know, like, it was only a short period of time. Like, all right. But he was the best pitcher ever.
Yeah.
While he was doing it.
And from what I understand, he retired in his prime, right?
Yeah.
Koufax? Yeah.
He was 30. Said his arm hurt a lot, and I get it. It did. He said he couldn't straighten his arm, so he retires. It makes sense, right? And I actually once had a personal conversation with Whitey Ford when he was talking about his retirement. And Whitey Ford, another guy that, you know, the numbers aren't crazy. He obviously dealt with wartime missing. He was in military service in 1951 and 1952. I'm looking back on it right now. But Whitey Ford was 38 years old. He had a 16-year career. He went a long time. But in that last year, in 1967, he retired in the middle of the season. And he was pitching well. And I talked about his ERA was 1.64 that season. He was pitching well. And he said his arm just hurt so much. He just had to stop. They obviously didn't have the rehabilitation, the physical therapy that they have now. So
right.
He just walked away middle of the season. He's like, I can't do it anymore. I'm just in too much pain.
We talked about our eyes going there, Mike.
Yeah.
Are my eyes deceiving me? Because I just pulled up Sandy Koufax's numbers. And it's understandable why his arm hurt, because his last 2 years, in 65, he was 26 and 8, 43 games, 41 starts, 335 innings pitched. And then in his last season, 27
complete games. The last 2 years.
Okay. Now I understand why your arm hurt.
Yeah. He threw 335 innings and then 323 innings. So he threw 54 complete games in his last two seasons. There's not 54 complete games annually in Major League Baseball now. Right?
Right. Yeah, it's insane.
So anyway, we've gotten off on a tangent.
Yeah, we did.
Because of
it's fun.
CC Sabathia.
Fun to
it is.
Yeah.
Because of CC Sabathia's potential Hall of Fame status. Rest of this game last night, Tauchman, 1-for-4. He hits a home run last night. It's just amazing to see this Yankees lineup, like what it looks like now. Judge got a hit last night, 1-for-3 with a run scored. Luke Voit, 1-for-2 with a run scored. Gleyber Torres, 1-for-4. Yankees made 3 errors. It was a little sloppy. Torres made a ridiculous ole kind of error last night. But Higashioka, 1-for-4 with a run scored. So Yanks win 6-2. Win goes to Sabathia, loss goes to Jacob Junis. Any sense of when some of these Yanks are coming off the DL now, Joe?
Well, it's hard to say, but I guess we got a little bit of good news where Andujar was able to toss the ball, and he said he wasn't feeling any pain. Let's see. I mean, like we mentioned, Severino, we're looking at late June, early July. I believe Stanton, I haven't heard a timetable for him, but I haven't heard about any setbacks as well. So the addition of Logan Morrison, the Yankees Logan Morrison.
Yeah.
And, he could play a few different positions. So you wonder is it plantar fasciitis that Bird has, and he really doesn't recuperate very well. So
it's a tear in his plantar fascia, which is going to be a lot longer than just a strained plantar fascia.
Yeah, so that could be a long thing. So, it's almost unprecedented to have. I think it's about 12 players right now on the IL, right?
Yeah, it's pretty brutal. Stanton's working through it. He's saying he could return before the club wraps up a lengthy West Coast trip on May 9th. It's only April 20th.
And there's no timetable for Aaron Hicks, the last one left. I mean, issues are tricky, so,
no batting practice yet.
Yeah, that's concerning.
For him. So a couple other news and notes in baseball. We can come back to it in the third hour because we're going to turn the page over to football after this. The Athletics extended Chris Davis this year, 2-year, I believe, $33 million deal. Aradis Vizcaino underwent season-ending shoulder surgery. So part of my early season strategy of racking up saves and holds with Aradis Vizcaino is over, Joe. We knew this would happen, and that's done. So Minter, I believe, is the guy picking up the saves there. So he's already on a team in our league. So we'll come back. We'll talk football. It's Mike and Joe in hour number 2 after this.